Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, and happy Friday. You know, if you've been listening all week, we have been talking about Operation Christmas Child. Now, I know that everybody has that one friend who is just overly excited about Christmas, who brings out their decorations way too early, leaves them up way too long, and I'm so happy to be that friend for you. I really am. And I'm already working on my boxes. I finished mine, and it may be too early for you to decorate for Christmas, but it is not too early for you to make a gift box, a shoebox for children all around the world that is going to share the good news of Jesus Christ and Christmas cheer. Now, that drop-off is happening between November 13th and 20th, and there's more than 4,500 drop-off locations. So if your church is not participating or you don't know a neighboring church that's participating, just go to samaritanspurse.org/OCC to learn more and to find a drop-off location near you. And I am, like I have told you, I did four boxes, like I have four kids at home, and it was so much fun to put those together. And you may not know this, but you can actually, you'll scan a code that comes with your box and you'll be able to track it and see where it goes. And I have my address in there, and there's a chance that the little kiddos that get my box might write me back. So I will keep you posted on that. I'm super excited. Well, today I've got a solo show for you. You're stuck with me. We're going to have a Ask Dr. Nurse Mama. I keep getting all of your questions. And let me just tell you something. I don't have everything figured out, but I have learned a lot along the way, and I am not afraid to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. And today, what we're going to talk about is social media. Now, this is by far what I get the most questions from parents about, is trying to navigate this beast in your home with your children. Should we do social media? Should we not? When should we do it? How old should they be? What platforms are okay? What rules should be in place? What monitoring software should be there? These are all questions that I get. But today, I just might surprise you a little bit because I'm going to flip the script. Now, I know as a pediatric nurse practitioner that the best way for kids to adopt healthy behaviors is for us to model them ourselves. And that's so hard. If you want a kid to wear a helmet, then you wear a helmet. If you want them to wear their seatbelt, then you wear your seatbelt. If you want them to eat broccoli, well, unfortunately, you've got to eat broccoli. And I think so many times we are guilty of trying to control our kids' behavior on social media. We're trying to micromanage their choices when we really need to hold up a mirror and look at our own practices. So earlier this week, I went to speak to a group of MOPS, mothers of preschoolers, and this was the topic that they wanted. These were the questions that they had, and I've also gotten questions from listeners. So with that, we're just going to dive in, and I want you to put on your tough suit because there are some things I'm going to say that are going to step on your toes, that are going to be a little convicting, but we'll all be convicted together. Now, like I told you, social media is on the minds of every parent. And I think even hearing those words, we just kind of all collectively groan and we just want it to go away. But it's not going to go away. It is a reality of life today. Now, Gen Z, they are called digital natives because they have grown up with technology. It's not novel to them. I mean, it's really sad because I have to have a tech department to help me. And that started when my kids were in like fifth grade. That's what I mean. Like, I'm looking at YouTube videos and watching sixth graders teach me how to do things online. This is a humbling place to be, but it is the reality. So let me just give you some basic statistics on social media that might just surprise you, or maybe not. But life today, we have 2.45 billion monthly active users on Facebook. Now, if you talk to any Gen Z, they will tell you, tongue in cheek and with a little bit of affection and maybe a slight eye roll, that Facebook is indeed for old people. So that's where all the baby boomers and the Gen X gather around the virtual water cooler and we share about our lives. But most kids are watching YouTube, I mean, even from a very young age. So get this, there are 5 billion, that's billion with a B, videos uploaded to YouTube every day. That is 300 hours of content uploaded every minute. Now, I want you to stop and think about this. How many of you out there are, you know, my age and you remember growing up with no technology and you just read the back of the cereal box because there was nothing else to read? Or you read the encyclopedia because, again, there was nothing really else to do. Kids today have complete oversaturation and overstimulation with content. I mean, for us, we would go to Blockbuster and think, oh, please, please don't let that be an empty box so we can watch a movie tonight. And now kids have millions of hours of streaming available to them. On Twitter, now known as X, there are approximately 500 million tweets a day. Snapchat, which used to be the cool kid on the social media block for kids, has 186 million daily active users. But parents, get this, TikTok has 500 million daily active users. And this is really concerning. Now, you should know there are actually a lot of college campuses across the country that have banned TikTok. You cannot use the college Wi-Fi to access TikTok because of foreign security concerns. And this has been widely discussed in the public media. And that is a real thing. That is a concern. And sometimes I think as parents, you know, when we look at those terms of use and we just click a box, you slide down to the bottom. But especially for these social media platforms, you don't realize how much of your information and your privacy that you're giving away. For example, did you know that almost 90% of content that's posted publicly on social media has a third-party host? So there are other companies that are out there and they're intended to capture every photo that is posted. So even if you post it and take it right down, like a kid, you know, might make a quick decision that's unwise, that content is still there. And that is a scary thing. Now, social media is here to stay, but let's look a little bit at the culture and the words that it's brought with it. Now, every year, Oxford puts out the word of the year, and there are some other entities that do it too. But in 2009, the Oxford word of the year was unfriend. Now, it's amazing to think that just even in our lifetime and in our kids' lifetime, the word unfriend did not exist. And the way that kids act online really influences the way they act in real life. So they are growing up realizing that, hey, if I don't like you anymore, if I don't like what you have to say, I'll just unfriend you and you won't be, or whatever that, you know, a disconnect is on a social media platform. And they're doing this in real life too. They're just unfriending people, ghosting them, just not calling them back and just saying, I don't want to have to deal with it. So I'm just going to disappear. Now, Oxford Word of the Year continued. Let me give you a little glimpse at the cultural landscape here. 2010 was refudiate. 2011 was app. Again, we are now, we can't hardly get through a day without an app. And I hope, by the way, that you do have American Family Radio's app and you're listening to the show every day. But that is a new word. 2012 was GIF or JIF. Now, if you really want to start a debate among Gen Z, ask them how to say this word. For some reason, there is a very healthy debate that it is GIF or JIF. And those are those little, you know, silly pictures that people will send to you on your phone. 2013 was selfie. I still wish I had a video of my sweet husband's face when I told him selfie was in fact a real word. And now we have selfie folders in our iPhone. 2014 was vape, and that is really when that started to take over in the United States. Now, that brings us to 2015, when, friends, the word of the year was actually not even a word at all. The word of the year was the laughing face with tears emoji. That was considered the word of the year. And what we see in our kids is they start to see communication as digital and disposable. I'll never forget my kids sitting on the couch and texting their friends right next to each other. And I was completely befuddled. And I said, "Why don't you just talk to each other?" And they said, "Mom, we're talking emoji. You can't speak emoji." And that is what they are doing. It's another way of communication. And when we look at the way that our kids are communicating, communication is designed to disappear. I want you to think about your grandparents or your great-grandparents and how special their handwriting was. You could recognize it. I know my husband's grandfather had absolutely beautiful calligraphy handwriting. And if you handed me something today that he had written, even though he has been gone and in heaven for many years now, I would still recognize it. But how often are we handwriting things for our kids? They just see communication as more digital and disposable. It's really interesting too, because they actually don't value pictures. Now, I don't know if you have a teenager and if you've experienced this, but they take the most unflattering photos you can imagine. I'll have my kids like put their phone right under my chin and take some sort of horrible photo, which of course we all know if you're, you know, a mom that's about my age, the one word you're going to say to someone taking my picture is higher, lift that phone higher, get a better angle. But they don't care because they can just delete it and take another one. And they value candid photos. Now let's continue on with the word of the year and look at the landscape. 2016, we have post-truth. 2017, we have youth quake. 2017 is fake news. 2018, toxic justice. 2019, climate emergency. And they was the word of the year, using they singularly as a pronoun. 2020, unprecedented and pandemic. 2021, vax or allyship. And 2022 was goblin mode. Now, many of you probably are thinking, what in the world is that? That's just basically letting out your inner goblin. Let it all go. Just be as bad as you want to and just go into goblin mode. I don't know how else to say it. Definitely not reflecting the worldview that we likely want our kids to have. But we have to understand, we have to have some compassion and some empathy for our kids, because if we didn't grow up with smartphones, we really don't understand what it's like to live at the speed of a smartphone. Now, I'm going to tell you the story to illustrate this. This is a story about a young girl, a teenager, young adult named Lily, who was on a train one day outside of New York City. She was just minding her own business on her phone, and someone took a video of her without her knowledge or consent. Now, you see, Lily had a condition called neurofibromatosis, where these little tumors grow all over her body. They're really subtle, but someone who took this video used two emojis, not even words, to change her entire life. The first emoji was a monkey face, and the second emoji was a question mark. So basically, posting this video asking, does this person, this was at the height of public concern over monkeypox, does this person have monkeypox on a train, was what they were asking and insinuating. Now, Lily didn't even know this video had been posted, and her sister saw it after it went viral, and millions of people saw it. This is the world our kids are living in, and we wonder why they're feeling so anxious, even if they don't have social media, even if they're not posting anything. Anywhere they go out in the public, someone could video them and humiliate them and cancel them. Now, you and I were afraid of Mean Gene in the lunchroom stealing our lunch money in front of maybe dozens of our friends, but this is viral humiliation on a global stage. So we have to start with having some compassion. Now, when we come back, I'm going to lead us through some self-reflection where we look at our own social media and phone uses and think, are we helping our kids as much as we can? I know that after you listen, you'll find some things to do, you'll be convicted, and we'll all grow a little bit together. I'll see you in just a little bit.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, welcome back to an Ask Dr. Nurse Mama edition of the show where I am answering all your questions about social media. Now, again, if you were listening before the break, we're doing this with a twist, though. This is not just about our kids. Oh, friends, this is about us. We really have to look at our own habits that we are pointing the finger at our kids for. And you may have heard, I've always heard my granny say that when you point one finger at somebody else, then three fingers are pointing right back at you. So I've been talking about the reality that our kids are facing in this digital age. Now, I want you to think, here's a quiz for you. What year was the iPad introduced? What year do you think that was that it changed the world? Now, it may surprise you, whatever year you have in your mind, that it was just 2010. And so we have a whole generation of kids that don't know what it's like to grow up without a screen, without a smartphone, without an iPad, and it's changed the way that we parent. I think about when I, in the early days of my parenting, when I would have meltdowns at the grocery store. Oh, I'm sorry, my kids would have meltdowns. Maybe I had them too, but I didn't have an iPad or a smartphone to keep them entertained. And sometimes that can be helpful, and sometimes we pass it over with a little bit of guilt. That's true. But the truth is, what that smartphone and iPad and that technology did to society was that it connected us in ways that we had never been connected before, and it instantly created global community for our kids. At the same time, it made us more disconnected than ever. And even in your own house, and I'm guilty too, don't think that I'm not guilty or struggling, but how many times have you texted somebody in your own household rather than just going to find them? You just text them, are you in your room? Is dinner ready? Like, what is going on? But we miss that chance for eye contact. Now, it takes about 20 seconds of eye contact for our kids' brains and ours to release oxytocin, which makes us feel bonded to that person. And when we are just having our faces in our screens all the time, it makes our kids feel disconnected. Now, research shows us that 85% of us use a phone while we're waiting. I think that number is probably way higher, like almost everybody does. Usually, if I'm somewhere waiting, the only person not going to be on their phone is some really unbelievably sweet little grandparent who is just wanting to talk to everybody or knitting or crocheting. And I know that my granny was very good about that. As soon as I walked into her house, if the TV was on, it was going to go off, and she would tell my pawpaw, Jessica's here. We have company. We come sit at the table. Let's have a talk. And she would give me something to eat. Now, 82% of us use our phone while we're multitasking. So have you ever binge watched a show while you're washing the dishes? 70% of our kids use their phone for some sort of media while they're studying. Here's something really convicting. 69% of us, and probably higher by now, our phone is the very first thing we touch in the morning and the very last thing we touch at night. Now, some of you will probably say, yeah, but I use my phone for an alarm. But it is a little disconcerting if you're really honest with yourself that when your eyes open in the morning, your first thought is, let me grab my phone. What time is it? What did I miss on social media? What's the news of the day? And it's all through the phone. The average teen spends about 9 hours a day on their phone. This is literally a full-time job. having screen time. Now, if you do have an iPhone, it's easy to look up your screen time. They give you a notice once a week, and you can look and see where you're spending your time because, again, those social media platforms, they are employing the world's best psychologists to try to get us to be addicted to the platform. I mean, one cat video or a sports blooper video, and 3 hours later, like, you have gone down a rabbit hole of reels and you don't realize how much time you have wasted. But it's really not a fair fight. It is not a fair fight between those psychologists and platforms who are perfecting the science of digital addiction, and they are going after our kids. That's just the honest truth. Now, here is the point in the program I've been preparing you for. It is a friendly little guilt trip. We're all going to take it together. Hold on. I want you to ask yourself, are you fubbing, P-H-U-B-B-I-N-G, are you fubbing your family? Now, fubbing is a term that we came up with in a scientific community to be able to measure the physical impacts of phone snubbing. Now, phone snubbing, that's where the word came from, is preferring the company of our phone over the company of the people we are physically with. And you see this all the time. You can go to any restaurant, you can go to any kid's sports game, you can go to any kid's school event, you can go, frankly, to church, and people are having their faces in their phone. But here are some of the really fascinating scientific impacts that we're learning about fubbing. This decreases eye contact. Like I told you, that is an important component of how God made us to produce oxytocin and create warm feelings of bonding during communication. God has given us a built-in help, a built-in aid by just having eye contact. But the mere presence of a phone creates feelings of tension and disconnection from our kids. It decreases our kids' sense of belonging in our family, and it negatively impacts their self-esteem. It creates discontentment during meals and even negatively impacts digestion. And it makes our kids think less of us and see us as rude and insensitive. Ouch, I did warn you. Now, if I could show you this picture, there's a picture that I like to show that's a little guilt trip. It's parents all with their faces in their phone and this little toddler that's sitting there saying, I wish I was their phone so they would hold me and look at me and watch after me all day long. Oh, that's really, really hard. So sometimes, in addition to fubbing, P-H-U-B-B-I-N-G, phone snubbing our families, we also model something called nomophobia. Now, what is that? That, you know what it is. You absolutely know what it is. It is that feeling of complete panic when you drive away from your house, you feel your pocket, you look in your purse, you look in the center console of your car, and you realize, oh my goodness, my phone is not there. Where is my phone? And you have that physical jolt of panic in your chest. This is a term, again, that we're using in science to research the impacts of phones. And we've defined it as a scientific community as a psychological condition when people have an irrational fear of being detached from their cell phone connectivity. And you know, it's so hard because we're sitting there fussing at our teens all the time about their screen time, or we're feeling guilty about the screen time we're giving our younger kids. But we have to remember that habits and attitudes are caught. They're not taught. It's not nearly as influential as doing what we do, not what we say. Now, some of the research emerging on nomophobia says 70% of us feel physically anxious without a smartphone connection. Nomophobia correlates with poor sleeping, poor school performance, neck pain, headache, it's actually a diagnostic code now called texting neck, and thumb strain and eye strain. And half of people with nomophobia show signs of phone and or social media addiction. In reality, I know we all feel guilty, but take a deep breath and let me ask you these questions and you can assess yourself for how much you model nomophobia in your home. And I'm guilty too. I am guilty. I'll say that again. Do you take your phone with you everywhere in the house? The bathroom even? The shower? Is your phone the last thing you touch at night and the first thing you reach for in the morning? Do you have physical symptoms of anxiety without your phone? Will you always turn around to go get it if you left it? Do you get anxious and panicky when your battery is low? Will you even stop by a store to buy another charger or a portable charger? Do you become hyperfixated when you don't have a signal, and do you repeatedly check or move your position? Do you sit on the floor in a dirty airport just to be close to a charger and not interrupt your phone use? And here's the hardest one of all, friends. Do you put other people's lives at risk to check your social media while you're driving? I told you, this is so tough, but we need to take a self-inventory before we judge our teens. We need to remove the plank in our own eye before we look at the speck in theirs. So if this is you and you're starting to think, oh my goodness, I feel terrible, Jessica, thank you so much for that guilt trip. Listen, here is hope for you. Admit it. Just admit that you have a problem. Just admit that this is a struggle for you. And choose in person over digital. Just make a commitment to change the way that you're acting, to unlearn and relearn new habits. Here's a hard thing. Ask your kids to call you out. Just tell them to call you out when you are fubbing them, when you are phone snubbing them, or when you're showing signs of nomophobia, and it will hurt. Now, I know my husband is listening. He is so sweet to listen to the program, and he has a hard time with this when our kids call him out on it, but we still give them permission, and it's so hard because we feel defensive, and yes, I do too, honey, I know. But honestly, evaluate your phone use. If you have an iPhone, look at that time you're spending. How much time are you spending on apps or websites that could be reinvested into your kids? And try to intentionally leave your phone for short periods of time and small distances. You know who's the best about this is grandparents. And then I see all of these grandkids getting so worried, like, you can't go on a walk, Grandma, without a phone. Like, what if you get attacked by a dog? What if you get hit by a car? What if you get lost? Like, what if you have a medical emergency? And they just don't understand life without that connection. Set some boundaries for yourself. Take breaks and find a balance. And ask your kids, what do you see about my phone use that seems unhealthy or frustrates you? That can be a way that you can start. And as always, give yourself grace and space in the journey. Our kids do not need a perfect parent. They need a present parent. All right, this leads us to guilt trip number two. I hope you're hanging in there with me. I promise we are all struggling in this together. But another question that I get frequently about social media is about something called sharenting. Now, that is sharing your parenting online and stewarding your child's digital footprint. And how much should you put online? How much should you share? How much should you have privacy? And there are different families that have a lot of different thoughts about this, but let's just talk about what it is. Now, sharenting is venting frustrations about maybe teen drama or funny bath photos or feelings of relief over being kid-free for the moment, or asking advice on struggles with your kids, maybe posting a picture of their messy room and saying you're so frustrated, or angst about teen dating or driving, my teen is doing this. And it's called, again, sharenting. Now, social media is a reality of 21st century parenting, and it is a great way to connect and seek support. I know I will always smile when I see that mom who's brave enough to post a mountain of dirty laundry and dirty dishes and just general chaos in the home and keeping it real. I appreciate that. But we have to think about it. Social media is really all about me, and it trains our minds to think about ourselves. Think about the messages of social media. It's watch me, like me, follow me, you know, and we start to really think about image crafting. And I'm going to talk more about that on Monday. But here's the honest truth, y'all. You are the literal caretaker of your child's permanent digital footprint. So from the time they're born, they don't have any control over their digital footprint or what is posted about them. You do. And one day they're going to look at everything that you've posted and they will see themselves through your eyes. So you have to ask yourself, what will they see? Will they see a narrative that conveys approval only through accomplishments, or dirty laundry aired about conflicted relationships, or a parade of embarrassing moments? It is a big responsibility. We have to think before we post. It is perfectly okay to be authentic and vulnerable, but you have to ask yourself, is this posted in love or in frustration? Are we going to laugh about this in the years to come? Is this a moment I want to preserve forever? Now, from the time my kids were pretty little, I started asking their permission to post photos of them on my social media. I really want them to feel good about what I post, and I want to model that they will also ask their friends' permission before posting. And I know we heard from the MOPS group, and I've heard from many of you, this can be a big point of frustration with other people posting pictures of your kids without your consent or permission. Sometimes that's the babysitter, sometimes that's the grandparents or other family members or friends. And so modeling that permission is a really great way to start. So for those grandparents, ask their permission to share something, and they'll understand through you modeling that is an expectation of a norm that you have. And sometimes our posts cause pressure to live up to the image that we're creating. So think about this. If your child is looking through your social media feed and they see the only thing that you post about them is their sports accomplishments or something else good that they do, it can be really, that's hard. That's really, really hard. So think about mamas and daddies and everybody who has that stewardship of the digital footprint. We have the extraordinary joy and privilege of telling our child's story, and we can make it a good one. We are the caretaker of our child's permanent digital footprint, and one day they will read the story of their life just as you've written it, and we can be a kind author and write a masterpiece. There'll be more after the break. Don't go away. I'll see you in just a few.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to a special episode of Ask Dr. Nurse Mama, where I am answering all of the questions you've been asking me about social media. Now, this is the thing that I get asked about the very most, and I am here to help and to share what I have learned along the way, including my own mistakes. Now, before the break, we were talking about sharenting and about being the author of our child's digital footprint. And that is a very deep responsibility that we have, but we can use it for good. And at the end, I'll give you some specific tips and my practices for social media. Now, I want to shift and tell you about teenagers using social media for a little bit, and once again, help us to frame our perspective, to have some empathy, because sometimes when we don't understand something, and something that seems like it's a really big deal to a kid, we look at it and we just diminish it, and we just say, oh, that's dumb, that's small, and it is a big deal to them, and so recognizing that can go a long way in helping you build a relationship bridge. Now, not too long ago, I did actually a suicide prevention event in the community, and we had lots and lots of teenagers and their parents come. Now, when they came in, I had a big, long table for the teenagers to walk by, and this table was covered with blank post-it notes and a question at the top of the table. The question said, What do you see on social media that your parents don't know about? So the teens gravitated to this table quickly, and they were writing all over the post-it notes. And I did not let the parents go over there just yet so that no one would see who was writing what, and the students would have the freedom to be honest so that we could learn as parents. But as soon as the parents were able to go, man, they ran over to that table. And I think their minds were filled with fearful things like that they would see pornography or violence or bullying or other really horrible things, which do happen. But an interesting phenomenon happened. There was actually just one word or one variation of a word written on almost every single post-it note on that table. So the question, what do you see on social media your parents don't know about? The word that they saw was perfection. People who are perfect, people who are prettier than me, people who are better than me, people who are more perfect than me. And the pressure to live a life that is constantly curated for Instagram, I believe it is ruining our kids' social health, their mental health. They are feeling social anxiety like never before. They are depressed and they feel disconnected and anxious all the time. And that is because of that prison of perfection that is there. Now, the other question that I asked on a second table was, what is the one thing you want from your parents that you're afraid to ask them for? And once again, a similar word started to emerge on all of the post-it notes. And they said what they wanted more than anything was for their parents to listen and to understand. Now, this is encouraging parents because sometimes we feel pressure to fix all of their problems, and we just can't do that. Sometimes we can't protect them from hurts that they experience in the world. But us being there to listen is so important. Now, when we are building those relationships and deciding when to be on social media, I've talked about this before, but the truth is that children have underdeveloped character to handle the overexposure of social media. They are just simply not equipped with mature decision-making to be able to be on such a public platform with no risk. That's the really hard thing. And sometimes they just make unwise decisions. Really good kids living at the speed of a smartphone without safety stops that would be in place like when we were growing up. Usually, if you were going to do something dumb, there was some time that was between there. You were going to drive somewhere or talk to somebody else, and maybe they would tell, you know, your mom. And we don't have that now. With just the click of a thumb, kids can make decisions that change their life. Now, one of the most common questions that I get, and I've answered this before, I'll answer it again here, is how old should my kid be when they get social media? This is an easy question to answer because the age set by federal law in the Children's Online Privacy Act is 13. The only social media platform that's approved under 13 is Facebook Messenger. That's approved down to 4. But to be honest, I don't see a lot of families using that. So the answer is it shouldn't even be a conversation until age 13. Now, I see a lot of parents who will check that box and they'll say, you know what, my kid is really responsible and I watch it really closely. But the law does not make exceptions for responsible kids and vigilant parents. And if something bad happens to your child on a social media platform and they're not 13, you have potentially voided any legal protections available to you. And they can come after you theoretically and say you violated our terms of use. And so parents, don't be afraid to buck the trend. Don't be afraid to say no. Don't be afraid to reset boundaries. Maybe you say, yes, you can have social media and it just goes terribly. It's perfectly fine to sit your child down and to say, you know what? I've learned some new things and I'm going to reset the boundaries because I care most about your health and your safety, and we're just going to need to do that. Now, you have to be tough enough to just let them be mad at you. And, you know, this is definitely not scientific, but I told you I would share. And sometimes I will tell my kids, look, I know that you're upset with me about this, but I'm older than you. I'm wiser than you. I have more money than you do. I have more friends, more resources, more experience. And if you want to fight me, that is certainly your right. And you can do that. And we can do this the hard way. But if you realize that I'm really on your side and I'm here to help, I love you enough to let you struggle in that. And that's what I learned to say to my kids. Now, some of those things that we did in my house were put down some rules that were not very popular at first. So this is actually one of my most popular social media posts that I have shared, and I'll share this tip with you. So when I was first seeing the world of smartphones, I encountered a patient in my practice who came in suicidal. She was very anxious and very depressed, and she came in, of course, with headaches and stomach aches, and through some gentle questioning and working with her family, what we discovered was that she had been at a slumber party, and she was changing in the background of someone else's photo, and she was undressed, and this other girl posted that photo online. Now, both of these girls were victims, honestly, because the girl that posted the photo really did not notice this other girl in the background. And that can be hard for us as parents to understand. How can you not see that? But kids are developmentally wired to just see themselves. And she really didn't look at the background. But once it was posted and it was there. And I saw the fallout of this and I thought, oh, how can I learn from this? So this is what I did, friends. I got my girls together. At the time, they were the ones that had the smartphones and friends that had smartphones. And also, there's a great inequity. So if you have friends who, your kids' friends who come over, some of them may have a phone, some of them may not. Some of them are allowed to have social media. Some of them are not. Some of them are FaceTiming people at 3 o'clock in the morning, and some of them are not. So I told my girls that we were going to create an equal playing field. I created a charging station on my kitchen counter. I got every kind of charger you can imagine. And I told the girls that they must tell their friends before they come over that there were no phones anywhere in the house except the charging station. Now, they could come and access them at any point. They could contact their parents. They could check their messages. They could do whatever they needed to do, but right there in the middle of my kitchen. Now, I want you to picture these girls, a big group of girls, coming over for a slumber party. And my girls had reluctantly told them, yes, this is what my mom is going to do. But I don't think they believed it. So they came over and they just looked at me like 13-year-old, 14-year-old girls will. And they said, are you like serious? And I said, yes, I am very serious. And one of them said, well, what are we going to do? But you know what? I promise you, they found something to do and it became a safe haven. And it actually worked well for my kids because it created an equal playing field. It wasn't one kid feeling left out because they weren't allowed to be on Snapchat or feeling like what happens sometimes is it's very easy to create a second account on another phone. And parents, sometimes you think, oh, my kid doesn't have a phone. We don't have to deal with that. But other kids will think if they don't have a phone, that's the worst punishment you could possibly ever do. So they will have pity on said phoneless person and they will give them one of their old phones or let them use their phone for social media. So that's just a tip and one way that I really decided to own my own parenting and just to be that parent and to be confident and calm and just to weather the storm. And it worked out okay for me. Now, let me give you answer a bunch of other questions here by telling you some basic tips for keeping your kids safe online. Now, the other thing I'll tell you is that not every kid should get every privilege at the same age. I've got 4 kids and they're very, very different. Those privileges should be based on responsibility, not age. And you can give an age as we can start having a conversation about that when you are this old. Now, when my oldest daughter first wanted social media, I am a professor. Poor kid, she has a professor mom, so I assigned her to write a paper. And it was a long paper with a big rubric, and she had to write about the risks of social media, and she got it. She did a great job. She wrote about what she would do if she saw harm, if she saw bullying, if she was approached by somebody that was scary, who she would friend, what she had to report. And at the end of that paper, I was starting to feel kind of like, okay, she's got it. You know what she said? She said, after doing this research, I realize I am not ready for social media and I respectfully decline at this time. It was a win-win. So anytime you can give your kids some sort of voice, I've talked about this before, some sort of pediatric choice, that's two choices you can live with, both of them, that can be helpful. But here's some safety tips. Anytime, if you decide they're ready to go on social media, all minor profiles should be set to private. And this is only a little over half of kids in the United States who have a private profile. Now, when I ask kids in my practice, is your media social media profile set to private? They look at me like I have two heads because the concept of privacy is very foreign to them. So I usually will ask, how do you keep yourself safe online? And that's a question you can ask your kids. Now, profile pictures should be stock photos because you all know by now that my primary work in nursing scholarship is in human trafficking. And I can tell you that recruiters and predators sit online all day long and they look for open public profiles that they can just get information and start grooming your child through their vulnerabilities that they freely share. So having that set to private and that profile picture say, hey, I'm not a minor who's looking for, you know, a connection, and maybe I don't have all of the wisdom that I need to have yet because I'm still a kid, that will help protect your kid. Tell them to never friend someone they don't know. It doesn't matter if they're juniors, aunts, uncles, cousins, roommates, dogs, you know, pharmacist. Like, it doesn't matter. If they're not friends in real life, they shouldn't be friends online. You should coach your kids to not post their birth date or their school name on their photos because that can be a security risk. And when your kid takes a photo, it takes a latitude, a longitude, and an altitude of where they are. And if that photo is posted publicly, the metadata can be extracted and a predator could create a map of your kid's house. Now, that can be kind of scary. Let me end with some hope here. As you are parenting teens, you need five people in your life. You need a support system. These are the five people I want you to think about you needing. You need an intercessor. You need someone who's going to pray for you, no questions asked. You can just text and say, pray for me in this, and they say, I got you. You need a counselor. Now, that may not be a formal counselor, but someone who's going to tell you the truth. Someone who is not afraid to tell you what you maybe don't want to hear, and someone who will give you wise advice. You need a healthcare provider that you trust with your life so that when these issues intersect health, you can go to someone reliable and trustworthy for guidance and advice. You need a friend, as Pastor Brian Haynes says, who is wildly unimpressed with you, who knows the real you and who you can be real with. And you also need someone in the same boat. So what is it that your family's going through? Is it a move? Is it financial hardship? Is it adoption? Is it fostering? Is it divorce? Who is someone that you can have that's in the same boat who's going to understand? Friends, these are really hard issues that we're navigating, and we didn't have these issues growing up, and so we're figuring them out as we go. But here on the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, I want to help you find hope along the way. It is there. There are so many families who want to raise kids who love God and serve others. And we'll be continuing to walk alongside you as a guide on the side on the way. Don't forget to join us next week. We're going to have some special guests to celebrate Veterans Day and how we can pass that value on to our kids. I can't wait to see you there.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.